American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day! This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the internet for Monday, July 14th, 2008. And that's right, you're listening to, once again, Newsreel, the WOG Global Sitrep on core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace, depending on what you're doing, but I want to know about it. That's why the tissue paper roll by the computer keeps getting smaller while everything stays dusty. Rand Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening and distributing this program, you are too. You can follow up on all these stories and check my facts by going to my live journal. And you can get there off of a permanent link that's now on thehun.com. Okay, I'm kidding. The Hun doesn't have a link to me. But you can get to it on sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. Don't go to the Hun. It's a naughty website. This would be a free podcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, SRN1, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, oh, never mind. You knew about the Hun anyway. It's not like I'm telling anybody new. KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, Radio Red Mercury as well. Right now, we are broadcasting to a crowd of thousands, maybe 12. At Second Life Node Archers. Grid coordinates 137-102-9999. 7 p.m.-ish. Thursdays-ish. Second Life time. And as well, let's not forget that we are being broadcast inside of the new wasteland inside Google Maps. You just throw in 3403-19.41N and 117-3729.50 West, and you will find a tent city, which is going up as we speak for all the dejected people who have no homes because of the gradual depression which is seeping into our society. Yay! I don't have a fiddle. Rome is burning, so I have the next best thing. Let's get into some feedback. Before we get started, though, today, now, normally, I don't do birthday stuff. Do not do that. But a buddy of mine, Reddy, she told me that it was Baldy's real-life birthday, where he's turning 65 today. And I'm really happy that, you know, it's a guy within his age bracket can be doing stuff within Second Life, which is good. He does have a little bit of memory problems, but luckily, before the Alzheimer's struck too deeply, he was able to build the entire Second Life node. So if you build a virtual universe in which I'm able to broadcast the show in, I'll talk about your birthday too. But unless you do that, don't bother talking. He set the bar pretty high, and that's about, that's about where it's at. So the guy who made Second Life, happy birthday, or didn't make Second Life, he made our presence in the web presence thing. It's Baldy! Come on, he's where we're broadcasting from. And so, happy birthday, dude. I'm glad that, of course, that would be on the Thursday, which the show is recorded. This is actually next Monday's show. This is the thing I call tempographics. This is what happens when you get some temporal distortion going on, and you have no idea, you know, just exactly what day it is, and you're listening to this, and I recorded this on a Thursday, but you're listening to it on a Monday, and this is relevant news from a week ago, and it all just kind of gets sort of slippery and slides around a bit. So, you know, that's the nature of tempographics. But anyway, speaking of sliding around a bit, let's talk about some political views. On my live journal, I had somebody write me in and say, "Dear SKTFN," now normally I normally don't comment on stuff that's on my live journal, because a lot of people show up. I get a lot of comments that are just flame bait. You know, people showing up going, "Wow, you're an idiot," blah, 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 blah. And I just delete them, because, you know, all that's going to do is I'm going to have some fan that's going to show up and say, like, "No, Sean's not stupid," you know, and so on and so forth. So I'd rather not have the infighting on the go. But I did a post a while back talking about neoconservatism, which is a sort of a venue I find myself drifting towards. So anyway, this was his question to me. Why neoconservatism? Why neoconservatism? Why neo? "Dear SKTFM, thanks again for your time reading this. During Newsreel, you mentioned something to the effect that your personal sense of ethics, morality, your individual rights, etc., could be different from your adherence to a political... could be different from your adherence to a political philosophy like neoconservatism. I find this a bit strange. Hang on. Your personal sense of ethic and morality individuals could be different from your adherence to a political philosophy like neoconservatism. Now, I'm going to stop it right there and say I wouldn't call myself a neocon. Just like Robert Heinlein. Robert Heinlein had people calling him a fascist. There's people calling him all kinds of crazy shit. But he never called himself that. I would just say that a lot of the things that the neocons believe in, I think, are pretty close to the money. Anyway, he goes on to say, I find this a bit strange. Maybe you could elaborate on that. Previously, I was unclear on your stance with moral relativism. Now, let me be really clear with moral relativism. I don't believe in it. I have, you know, as I understand it, moral relativism is two words. As I understand what those two words mean, moral relativism means that your morals are based upon the situation, so on and so forth. But anyway, I will carry on. Actually, you know what? I'm not going to dissect this. I'm just going to go through it, and then I'll answer. Previously, I was unclear on your stance on moral relativism, but since you mentioned that every situation should be judged individually, it seems to imply that you favor moral relativism. Neoconservatism does not agree with moral relativism, so that seems like a contradiction. I must not say anything back. I'd caveat this by saying, you caveat that? What does it mean to caveat something? But anyway, I'd caveat this by saying I do agree that certain ambiguous laws enforced by police should be handled on a case-by-case basis without the one-size-fits-all solution, often the taser, which is employed. Tasers are like Nerf bats. We ought to give them out to kids. On the other hand, there's a great deal of superfluous extra laws that I believe should be done away with. And because a few laws would still exist strictly to adhere, but that's my thing. I'm more of just a fan of liberty. I'd ask what you particularly identify within neoconservatism. The most important goal of neoconservatism is maintaining the United States as a superpower, primarily through military force rather than trade. You've often repeated that the current war in Iraq was perpetual lie and illegal, which I agree with, but that makes me wonder what kind of war you believe would be justified and for what reasons. In stark contrast, libertarians and Ron Paul specifically advocate policy of non-intervention and trade with all peaceful nations. It is my opinion, also held by many others, that America should lead by a good example in both domestic and foreign policy. They have utterly failed on both counts. I guess that's all I have to address for now. Thanks for your time. Avagdu. Okay, well, I'm going to go through this bit by bit. First of all, I am not into moral relativism. I do think that every situation should be judged, but it should be judged like this. Cop shows up, finds out what's going on. He shouldn't just have like a blanket statement to deal with stuff. Unless there's deal breakers, i.e. pedophilia, you shoot him. Thanks! I don't care what your justification is. That's wrong. You get to die. Questions? No. That's it. Sorry. You know, that's all there is to it. Just recently, we had, like, up until 9/11, we had the largest terrorist bombing incident that happened, which was the Air India bombing. And the guy just got out of jail, did his 20 years, now he's a free man. You know? He's a free man. And I'm sort of the opinion that, no, that guy should have got turned off. Okay, I mean, you're involved in, like, an elaborate terrorist plot to blow up planes and kill people. I'm sorry, man, you've totally, like, just forfeited your rights. So, I'm most definitely not a moral relativist. Let's be really clear about that. No, no, no. I believe in good and evil. Okay, I should say, I do believe in good and evil. People are like, oh my god, he's a mudhead. No. I'm just saying that there's stuff out there we don't understand, and I believe in good and evil. Okay, I'm just saying. Now, he goes on to say here that law enforcement, like the taser, for example. This is something I'm going to go off on tasers for just a minute here. Tasers are the greatest invention, which has been invented for law enforcement use in the last 50 years. If you've got any extra money, put it in taser, because I'm here to tell you, that stock is only going to go up. There's no way they're going to make tasers illegal. They're way too useful. I mean, think about how useful those things are. They've already come out with shotgun tasers. They've got it all. Okay, tasers are here to stay. Okay? Now, I don't think that maybe the neoconservative goal is to maintain the United States as a superpower, primarily through military force rather than trade. Okay, well, hang on now. Let's take the United States out of the equation. Because realistically, You know, Canada and the United States are very, very similar. I mean, we are Western culture, okay? The T-shirts you can wear in Canada, you can wear down in the United States. You know what I mean? I mean, that's what we're dealing with here. Culturally, it's one culture, Canada and the United States. So I'm going to just... So if neoconservatism is maintaining Western culture as a superpower, then I'm all about that. I'm okay with that. Rather, primarily through military force rather than trade. Well, you know, things have to get done. Okay, I'm not saying that that's the best way to do stuff, but power really does come from the barrel of a gun. Okay, I'm sorry about that, but that's just a fact. And if you don't choose to accept that, you can chant and beat tom-toms and eat tofu until you are blue in the fucking mouth, or somebody shows up with a gun and shoots you. Most people don't seem to... I like the neocons' way of thinking, because a lot of their stuff is based in reality. It's based in a direction of... working for your side. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of how it works. A lot of people go, well, Sean, you're always talking about, like, us and them and so on and so forth. I did a couple posts. People called me an Islamo-fascist and so on and so forth. And I don't think that's or not, pardon me, not an Islamo-fascist. They called me an Islamophobic. And I don't think I am necessarily phobic. I'm not afraid of Islam, but I do think that there's some stuff that's going on with the Wahhabist and Sharia law that I think is a bad idea. So, yeah, if that means that makes me, you know, because I don't think that people should be able to have sex with nine-year-olds, which is okay in Islam according to some of their teachings. Actually, no, according to what their prophet taught, that's okay. That is okay. So, because he married this broad when she was 6 and fucked her when she was 9. So, yeah, you're basically... Does that mean that if I met the Prophet Muhammad, I would try to kill him? Yes. Why? Because he's a pedophile. Thanks for calling! Deal breaker! This, ladies and gentlemen, is what is called conviction. And it's something that neocons seem to have a little bit more of than a lot of these crazy... You know, kind of pie in the sky stuff. I like Ron Paul. I do. I think he's a good guy. However, according to Ron Paul, he would let the people in Africa just, you know, continue to kill each other and whatever. It's not my problem. Fuck it. Let these people die. And I draw the line there. I don't think that should be the way. I do think there should be social programs. I do believe in a woman's right to choose. I do believe in a lot of things that a lot of neocons do not believe in. You know, and I think that liberty is there. I think that there is a use for liberty. I think capitalism can have a good side, and it's a lot better than a lot of the communism that's going on there. And a lot of these, you know, left-wing kind of guys, they sort of go that route. So I wouldn't say that I'm a neocon as such. I would just say that there's a lot of policies in there that I agree with. Probably more policies in the neocon. Like, let's say there's 100 policies in the neocon. And there's 100 policies in the liberal Democrat crowd, okay? I would probably agree with 20 of the 100 of the liberal Democrat ones and probably 60 of the neocon ones. But there's ones in each one that I'm not going to agree with, and that's why I call it a walk. You know, moral relativism is for the birds. If you start going... Now, just to go back onto the moral relativism thing, moral relativism is linguistic ninjutsu. If you are able to justify stuff, if you're like a language lawyer like Noam Chomsky, you can justify anything. It becomes about the skill of your mouth. That's what it's about. And if you are able to justify it, well then, hell, I guess it's all good if you can argue your case in court. But there are some things which should not be justified. And believe it or not, my whole stance about, you know, killing pedophiles... That has got me major flack. When I've got other stances too, which I don't talk about because, you know, I figured that everybody would be able to get behind the whole killing pedophiles thing. I thought that would be like a sure win, no problem. You know, no one would challenge me on that. But I have. I've had people, oh my God, Sean, I can't believe it. What's the big deal? Well, you know, I'm not even going to engage you in a conversation. If somebody on the street came up to me and said, I don't see a big deal about having sex with a 9-year-old, I'd probably physically attack them. I probably would. To be totally honest with you, I'd be like, get the fuck away from me, or I'm going to hurt you. You know, like, these people, like, I don't understand what's going on with people's headspace and timing these days. Like, I really don't get it. And a lot of people who don't believe in good and evil are these guys who hang out in universities a lot and read a lot of texts. But anybody who's ever been in the presence of stuff that is quote-unquote evil, however you want to define it, you can taste that shit. You could taste that shit in your mouth. You could totally feel it. It is a guttural revulsion. You totally know what you're dealing with. Some people will say it's shock, whatever. I don't know. Paint it any way you want. But I just happen to believe that that particular... I believe that there's stuff out there that's evil. There's stuff out there that I don't agree with Focus on the Family on. And there's stuff out there that I happen to agree with some Christian ideas on. There's also stuff out there in Islam that I do agree with. There's also stuff that the Jews do that I do agree with. There's stuff that everybody does that agrees with. And that's why I'm a wog. Because I'll look at all the selections. I won't allow myself to be, you know, corralled into one corner and then categorized, militarized, stamped, numbered, and then filed out. I already played that game. So instead, I'm just going to say, I'm a wog, which means I hit the salad bar, I took what I want, I left what I didn't. If you don't like it, hey, that's fine. You can pick up different things from the salad bar. But let's not kill each other, okay? Let's not do that unless there's deal breakers in there, i.e. you're a serial rapist, pedophile, you're someone who, you know, blows up planes full of innocent people for shits and giggles. You know, that kind of a thing, because your God told you to. Not on, okay? Now then, in tinfoil hat news, let's get straight into the news. U.S. military bankrolled early development of a non-lethal microwave weapon that creates sound inside of your head. Let me read that again. The U.S. military bankrolled early development of a non-lethal, thank you, microwave weapon that creates sound inside your head. But in the end, the gadget may be just as likely to wind up in shopping malls as on battlefields. As I report in New Scientist, the project known as Medusa, holy Jesus, who comes up with these names? Who comes up with, hey, let's make a voice that makes people crazy like snakes in your head and call it Medusa. Yeah, that's a great idea. Contrived from the acronym for Mob Excess Deterrent Using Silent Audio, should not be confused with the long-range acoustic device and similar gadget which simply project sound. This one uses so-called microwave auditory effect. A beam of microwaves is turned into sound by interaction with your head. Nobody else can hear it unless they're in the beam as well. The effect has long been a laboratory curiosity with no application. But over the years, the military has been intrigued. The idea, dubbed the telepathic ray gun, was mentioned in the 1998 U.S. Army study, which turned up in a recent Freedom of Information Act document dump. So they've been working on this now for 10 years. 5 years later, the Navy decided to put some R&D dollars into the project. Now, as I note in the New Scientist website, Dr. Lev Sudovic, as the Sierra Nevada Corporation, has provided details. There are health risks, he notes. Yeah, no shit. The biggest issue from the microwave weapon is not the radiation. It's the risk of brain damage from high-intensity shockwave created by the microwave pulse. So you put the Sam Kinison scream in there, go, ow, ow, and send people into shock. Clearly, much more research is needed if this affects the sort of power levels that Dr. Sudovic is proposing. But if it does prove hazardous, that does not mean the end to weapons research in the area. The device is delivered a lethal shockwave inside a target skull. It might be an effective death ray. This guy just has, he just wins. He's just made a win. Dr. Sadovic also makes the intriguing suggestion that instead of... Now, the doctor says this. The good doctor, quote-unquote, also makes the intriguing suggestion that instead of being used at high power to create intolerable noise, it may be used at low power to produce a whisper that was too quiet to perceive consciously, but may be able to subconsciously influence someone. The directional beam could be used for targeted messages, such as in-store promotions. Holy dog shit. How to make sure you're walking around with Disturbed cranked, like on your headphones for a million. Sadovic even suggests subliminal advertising, beaming information that was not consciously heard, a notion also spotted by the U.S. Army's Voice to Skull page. While its effectiveness of subliminal persuasion is dubious, I can see there might be some organizations interested in this capability. If that doesn't work, you could always point the thing at birds. They seem to be highly sensitive to microwave audio, so it might scare flocks of birds away from wind farms, or shoe pigeons from city streets. Or, you know, you point it at homeless people and scream at them through loudspeakers, tell them to get moving, they can't tell the difference. This is some creepy-ass tech right here. Okay? This is some creepy-ass tech right here. I mean, what couldn't you do with this if you were doing covert stuff? I mean, you could make people go insane. This is some pretty seriously disturbing stuff. Moving on with the seriously disturbing stuff, in pharma fascist news, Australia will offer sexual offenders, you ready for this one, I just want to kill these people, okay, I just want to turn these guys off, I think there are things worse than death, okay, I'm the first to admit that. Australia will soon offer here. It's a choice. Sex offenders to be released from prison sentences if they accept to be subject to testing new kinds of castration. Australia reports. So, let me get this straight. You're locked in a cell. You've totally been under the cooler in isolation for years and years and years. You can either get out and we do some testing, or you can stay inside your cell. Well, fuck, that's not a choice. We're talking about chemical castration, which would eliminate every sexual desire of a person. Doctors consider it the best rehabilitation for rapists and pedophiles. Doctors would. I have a 39-cent solution. Premier Anna Bly supports the kind of castration because it is only in a case it is prescribed by a psychiatrist and accepted by the patient. Yes, but rape is a it's a crime of violence. Rape is not a sexual crime. Okay, it is a crime of violence. Pedophilia, crime of violence. Okay, if they can't rape them with something between their legs, they'll find a shovel handle or something. All of the research indicates that chemical intervention only works if it's done a part of an overall treatment of a sex offender, said Anna Bly. Let's race. You treat your pedophile, I'll treat my pedophile. My way's 100% effective, no chance of repeat offending. And it's cheap. However, doctors are close to discovering a more effective castration method, and if sexual offenders accept to be subjected to the treatment, they could be exempt from prison sentences. This is what they're doing in Australia. Now, this is really disturbing to me, because this kind of testing is going to be the kind of stuff where they're going to be, you know, does your partner not have enough sex drive? If you drug her, you'll be able to get that kind of sex drive. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about here. Okay, kind of creepy, not so good. Not so good! You know, now you cross that with some of this other stuff. I mean, this is totally like, wow, we want your soul kind of stuff. You know what I mean? But, you know, and not everyone's bad. Not everyone's bad. I got a new story here, which I think is a really good story, because it's relevant. In human news, he's a criminal, but he did the right thing when it mattered. Alerting cops what he feared was a terror plot the day before the 4th of July. Now, check this out. This is interesting. At about 5 p.m. yesterday, an unidentified thief with a police record broke into a red van, been parked outside the 53rd Street and 2nd Avenue in Brooklyn Sunset Park for about a month. So the van had been out there for a month, the source told the Post. He was stunned when he looked inside. It was filled with gas cans, styrofoam cups containing a mysterious white substance, and protruding wires and switches. The street is lined with brownstones. There's a ballet studio and a small Muslim school. So he drove the van 15 blocks to 37th Street and parked it at a desolate waterfront location behind a Costco store and next to some little-used piers. Now, okay, that van could have gone off the minute he started it up. He could have turned a key, the whole thing could have been on a motion switch, boom, the van goes. But the guy put his own life on the line to get that van the fuck out of there. Then he got out and called the cop he knows from his run-ins with the law. He did the right thing, a high-ranking officer said, and he possibly saved a lot of people's lives. Another source said cops are unlikely to file charges for the break-in. Yeah, no kidding. The van had Delaware plates and had been issued to another vehicle. It's not clear when the cargo was put inside. Police Commissioner Ray Kelly joined cops from the bomb squad and the anti-terror force at the scene. Cops shut down 3 blocks around the area. Now, I myself have found a bomb like of this same description in a public place. Okay? And I'm wondering now, why was this a plant? Like, what was this bomb doing there in a van for a month? Was it like some terror plot? Everybody lost their guts? Like, that's very, very interesting. And then we hear about it. You know what I mean? You'd wonder if that's like what's going on with that? Because terrorists are not going to leave a wired bomb ready to go outside of a mosque for a month. That doesn't make sense. You know, and there's a Muslim school just down the block. Sounds a little bit, you know, good enough to frame to me. But there's definitely something going on. Now, I'm here to tell you, the next thing that should happen is you're going over that van with, like, fingerprints. I mean, something in there. It's got to have some kind of print on it. You know what I mean? And not just, you know, on the window. I mean, like, inside. This is, this happened in the United States. And the bomb I found was in Canada. So it's kind of interesting. It's kind of an interesting thing, you know, to see that. Not too great. Now, on to the Mud Hut news. Because as we know, I'm all about the religion sometimes. It just, these people crack me up. Now, this particular, I know I'm going to get called on this one. But anyway, in Mud Hut news. After hundreds of years without them, prayer rooms are suddenly regarded as an essential requirement for the workplace. a guide produced by St. Ethelburga's Center for Reconciliation and Peace in the City of London, said employers should take into account the needs of their religious employees. My question would be why? It says the business case for providing prayer rooms and best practice on creating, managing effective space by making good business sense, by helping attract, motivate, and retain staff, in building a reputation for diversity. If I have a business, I'm interested in making money. If you're going to work for me, you should be interested in making money. I'm not going to put in a special room for you to pray to whatever crazy god you want to pray to. That's just fucking insane. The guide is sponsored by Barclays and the Merkus Company, created in collaboration with the Employers Reform on Belief, Quiet Room Designs, and a number of other organizations, many of which have vested interests. The guide has the backing, inevitably, of the Department of Committees of Local Government. Contains a preface by Right Honorable Hazel Beers, MP, who wrote, "No matter who we are, I believe we can all benefit from finding a little time to reflect and rise above our daily routines. I hope this guide will inspire more businesses to lay large and small, to help people find their own moments of refuge in a busy day. I have an idea. Why don't you give them a day off?" Just a thought, you know. Rather than giving them a room, which is a sanctioned room to pray to your God in, this is just fucking insane. Terry Sanderson, president of National Secular Society, "Let's cut through the gobbledygook and double top that surrounds religion in the workplace and look at the reality. Quiet rooms, meditation areas, and multi-faith prayer rooms are all euphemisms for Muslim prayer rooms." Interesting. There's been no call in such spaces before Muslim activists started to clamor. Now, all religions have to have one. The staff room or the canteen used to be a place to go and have coffee and unwive. Now we have a prayer room. Mr. Sanderson said that however inclusive such spaces were intended to be, they're invariably taken over by Muslims who start excluding other people. He pointed out to the case of the Royal Mail and the hospital in Glasgow, where conflict over the use of prayer rooms has led to coarse cases and extreme unpleasantness. As well, you know, there's a bunch of Muslims who are upset because they got a picture of a dog on a cell phone ad. Like, these, okay, you know what? You want to worship your God, that's fine. Okay, I don't put up with the Christians burning my books. I don't put up with the Jews, you know, telling me I can't eat certain food. But if you're going to come in and start pushing your religion on me, you're going to be met with force. Fuck off. I don't care who you are. I don't care about your stupid God. You can bang your face off the floor and worship rocks all you want, man. I don't give a fuck. Do it on your own. I don't go pushing my shit on you. Don't go pushing your shit on me. So you're going to come up and start, "Well, you know, well, if we don't do this, they'll get upset." What? What do you mean they're going to get upset? So, well, you know, welcome to the world, dude. This is part of our culture here. You know, a lot of the times, multiculturalism is an interesting idea. It's an interesting idea. Some of it works. But when you have cultures that are, like, diametrically opposed and they're both trying to, like, you know, that's not going to work. It's not going to work, man. I think that if you move to a country, you should adopt that country as your home. Not saying you can't be a Muslim. Not saying you can't do that. You want to be a Jew? Fair ball. You want to be a pagan? You want to be a hula hoop worshipping psycho? That's okay too. But don't tell me, like, that you have to have some kind of special fucking treatment. Okay, that doesn't work, man. I mean, yeah, okay. Well, you get a prayer room. Well, I need a plane. I need a plane to fly up and be with my flying spaghetti monster. I mean, this is just insane. And I think that that's exactly what this is. I think that people are not willing to stand up and have any conviction in our day and age, where people are like, you know, just cut the shit. Well, I'm offended. Noted. I'm noted that you're offended. You know, don't try to blow me up or anything. But, you know, if I draw a cartoon and put a little arrow that says Muhammad on it, I don't really want you trying to, you know, cut my head off and drag me through the streets and hang me from a bridge somewhere. I'm just saying. You know, because that's a little bit psycho. And it just, the whole thing just makes me crazy. I cannot understand why so many people put up with this bullshit. And why so many people, especially in America, why is this being accepted in America? There's a guy who wrote a book, can't remember his name, it's called America Alone. It's a Canadian guy. Canadian guy wrote a book called America Alone. He's talking about how essentially Muslims and the Muslim faith are pretty much taken over because they're outbreeding everybody, okay? Because, you know, very family-focused, whatever. Some of it is a little bit alarmist. Some of it, you know, is based on fact. So you have to look at this stuff. Now, it's kind of like people who deny the Holocaust. Obviously, there was a Holocaust. Obviously. We know this. But you should be able to talk about it. you should be able to say, was there a Holocaust? And have an intelligent discussion where you can bring out the records and the trunks full of golden teeth and everything and say, yes, Virginia, there really was a Holocaust. We can talk about it because it's a good thing to talk about because that way we won't forget it. So I have no idea why these people who are Holocaust deniers are not put on CNN and just castrated on live TV by a bunch of Jewish scholars, you know, and video footage. Like, we have the data. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? If you go up, see, you know, maybe the secret with religion is just education. Okay, maybe that's the key. If we can just, you know, provide these people with enough education to go, guess what? You know, hey, yeah, a lot of the whole God concepts are sort of nuts, you know, so let's stop killing each other over God. Okay, or there's going to be a real problem here. If you got a guy who goes crazy in a mall with a gun, you don't ask him why he's going crazy in the mall with the gun. You just turn the fucker off. That's it. You know, I don't understand this, and I don't understand why, you know, people are, in essence, you want to know what terrorism is. Terrorism is making people comply to your wishes under threat of violence. That would be how I would define terrorism. So do as I say, or bad things are going to happen to you. I guess, actually, realistically, that's terrorism's the bad word to use for that. That's extortion, is what that is. That is extortion. Plain out. Let's stay away from the T word. Let's just call it extortion. And if you got a bunch of people like, we demand to have, I don't know, spaghetti served to us every day by our employer because our faith says so, that's just fucking crazy. And I'm sorry, there's got to be enough people, well, you can't discriminate against me. Why not? If you're crazy, I don't want you working for me. And further to that, I honestly think that people should be able to hire and fire whoever the hell they want. If you want to hire some, if I'm a male chauvinist pig and I'm running malechauvinistpig.com and I want to hire men, that's my freedom. I'm allowed to do that. But apparently, that's when you run into problems. You see what I mean? And that's where I get a bit of a problem with these ACLU guys and stuff like that who are like, "No, no, no." The news makes a bigger deal about being black and white than anybody else does. Obama's black. Yeah, we know. We noticed, okay? The guy's black, all right? Big fucking deal. So what? The guy's black. Who gives a shit? Okay, his eyes are brown. He's got black hair. This is insane. This is insane. I don't understand why, well, we were brought over here as slaves and blah, 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 blah. Yeah, it's tragic. I know. A lot of bad shit happened, okay? But it's done. Nothing we do is going to change that. So let's just move forwards with this, okay? Let's stop segregating ourselves. Let's stop instituting a cultural apartheid situation and start getting along so we can turn our attention to the real matters at hand rather than being distracted by division amongst our people. Just a thought. I don't know. Just a guy talking over here, but, you know, maybe, I don't know, if I was a member of the Flying Spaghetti Monster cult and I moved to Israel, I wouldn't expect them to start serving me spaghetti for lunch. You know, I'm just saying. Now, in UK Decker news, a little bit of United Kingdom's knowledge here, European politicians have voted in favor for amendments to telecoms law, which campaigners say could be used to curb privacy online and file sharing. Digital rights groups in Europe have formed a loose coalition to highlight their opposition to the amendments, but MEPs have denied the amendments that are aimed at throwing file sharers off the net. MEP Malcolm Harbour, who helped oversee the so-called telecoms packet, said that it's about improving users' rights. I love the spin on these guys. The vote on whether to approve telecom packet itself, which is a raft of laws aimed at harmonizing European telecoms regulation, takes place in September. There's been a great deal of dismay in the committee at the interpretation being put on these amendments, he told the BBC News. They have nothing to do with copyright enforcement. Oh, no, of course not. The interpretation of them is alarmist and scaremongering and deflects from the intention, which was to improve consumers' rights. Are you insane? The campaigners say that one of the amendments makes it easier to enforce controversial three strikes law, in which the music industry is keen to use in order to clamp down on file shares. It would see users, now check this out, this is listener license all the way. It would see users receive two warnings if they download copyright material without permission, followed by a complete web ban. You are no longer allowed to access the internet because you steal music. That, my friends, is the listener's license. Can you believe that? So you get two warnings, and then they kick you off the web. Unbelievable. Tentative steps towards such policy are already underway in the UK, with BPI, formerly British Pornographic, or pardon me, Phonographic Industry, policing file sharing sites and informing ISPs of people who are downloading material illegally. Virgin Media sent out about 800 warning letters to users and the BPI, threatening to take other ISPs to court if they fail to join the campaign. Again, extortion. France is also about to enact laws that penalize persistent file sharers. MEPS voted against Europe-wide legislation to tackle the issue in April of 2008. Hoorah! Campaigners say the changes to telecom packet legislation have more fundamental implications for net freedom. Another web amendment allows government to decide what software can be used on the web. Holy crap! Holy crap! The Foundation for Free Internet, the Foundation for a Free Internet Infrastructure warned that could create a Soviet internet in which only software and services approved by governments would be allowed to run. Tomorrow, popular software applications like Skype or even Firefox might be declared illegal in Europe if they are not certified by an administrative authority, said an FFI spokesman in a statement. Mr. Harbour claimed the legislation has entirely more innocent intentions. It doesn't matter what your intentions are, dude. If you leave a gun unloaded and your intention is, or if you leave a gun loaded on the street and your intention is to make it easy for cops to grab, that's great, but the road to hell is paved with good intentions and someone's going to come by, grab that gun and use it in a way you don't intend it to. Or maybe you do. Maybe this is all just spin, which I would bank. These people aren't stupid. They're throwing a lot of money at this. This is very, very scary. It is about new provisions so that users can find out about new services. It will make a price comparison sites easier to set up. It will force regulators to give equivalent access to disabled users and enhance emergency services with caller location. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So let's take that, okay? So we've got, you know, the Total Web Overwatch system. Okay, that's what we got going on here. You got the Total Web Overwatch system. Now what? Well, if we follow that, we can go in with this new Fortress news. Now, this was actually from back in 2003, and this is something that, now, if you cross that with, you know, the whole, this next story, if you cross the whole monitoring thing, and Fortress news, let's just get in. Fortress meaning the movie. There's a movie with Christopher Lambert called Fortress. Really, really, really good movie. A senior government official in the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, DHS, has expressed a great interest in so-called safety bracelet. Holy crap. That would serve as a stun device similar to that of a police taser. According to a promotional video found at Lampert Less Lethal Incorporated website, the bracelet would be worn by all airline passengers. Why stop there? Let's just make it your paperwork and you got to wear it at all times. The bracelet would take the place of airline boarding passes, contain personal information about the traveler, be able to monitor the whereabouts of each passenger and your luggage, shock the wearer on command, completely immobilizing him or her for several minutes. The electronic ID bracelet, as it's referred to, would be worn by every traveler until they disembark the flight at their destination. Yes, you read that correctly. Every airline passenger would be tracked by government-funded GPS containing personal, private, and confidential information, and we would shock the customer worse than an electric dog collar if the passenger got out of line. Crime does not pay. Clearly, the electronic ID bracelet is an euphemism for the EMD safety bracelet, or at least a nefarious hidden ability, thus the term ID bracelets, and it's ambiguous at best. EMD stands for electromuscular disruption. Again, according to the promotional video, the bracelet can completely immobilize the wearer for several minutes. So, is the government really interested in this bracelet? Apparently so. According to a letter from Department of Homeland Security, from the Department of Homeland Security official Paul Ruwald, the Science and Technology Directorate, Office of Research and Development, which was written to the inventor whom he had previously met with, Ruwaldi wrote, "To make it clear, we, the federal government, are interested in the immobilizing security bracelet and look forward to receiving your written proposal." The letterhead, in case you were wondering, is from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security office at the William J. Hughes Technical Center in Atlantic City, International Airport, or the Federal Aviation Administration headquarters. In another part of the letter, Mr. Ruwald confirmed it is conceivable to envision use on such to improve air security on passenger planes, end quote. Would every paying airline passenger flying a commercial airplane be mandated to wear one of these devices? I cringe at the thought. Not only could be used as a physical restraining device, but also as a method of interrogation, according to same aforementioned letter from Mr. Ruwald. So he's talking about like, oh yeah, you'll tell us what we need to know. Kinda crazy. Would you let them put one of those on your wrist? Would you allow the airline employees, which would be mandated by the government, to place such a bracelet on any member of your family? why are tax dollars being spent on something like this? Very good question. I would look at something like that and go, what the hell? And as well, you know, why stop there? You know, we got this Institute of Company Policy. You know, we're working with sensitive information. You got access to some good stuff. So we got to put these bracelets on you so we can prevent things like this terrorist strike news. Ready for this one? This is a good one. A terrorist strike. New South Wales will not bow to the industrial terror tactics of rail workers who are threatening to strike during World Youth Day, Premier Morris Ima said. Now, this is, again, in Australia. In Australia, I believe. The Rail, Tram, and Bus Union said today it was planning a 24-hour strike by rail workers on July 17th, the busiest day of the Catholic event. The busiest day of the Catholic event. It is the day Pope Benedict the 16th will make his way through the streets of Sydney during the afternoon peak. The NSW government will take the matter to the Australian Industrial Relations Commission tomorrow. Mr. Iama said the government will not cave to the RTBU. The government will not be blackmailed into giving them what they result as a result of these industrial terror tactics. There's the word, terrorism. The threat to embarrass the state on one of the most important days of a recent history will not cut ice with the government. Oh, well. But you know, if you want a prayer room, that's okay. Mr. Iama said the government had offered the RTBU a 4% pay raise each year for 2 years and was willing to continue negotiations. The RTBU NSW Secretary Nick Lewaki said he understood the planned action would cause major concerns for commuters with no contingency plans in place. Again, don't trust your public transit system. It's always good to have a backup. WOGS would not have a problem with this. But again, we ask the commuters and the public out there to understand that we can't have frontline public sector essential workers being told they need to take a pay cut and cut back services. World Youth Day spokesman said organizers were confident the government would resolve the matter. Well, good call. Mr. Watkins said the government would go to the Australian Industrial Relations Commission, the AIRC, today in an attempt to resolve or defer strike action. Any threat to take industrial action is irresponsible. And in particular, next week, Mr. Watkins said, it will have a major negative impact on the people of Sydney, families going about their business as well for many a thousand other visitors who will be here for World Youth Day. The RTBU said it was taking action because the government had failed to offer its members an acceptable pay increase. So, do this or else. I mean, this is some interesting stuff, you know? What do I think here? Well, what are these guys being paid? Are they being paid a fair wage? Because unions are a good idea, because they stop people from being put in slave camps. But then what happens is a lot of these unions get way too big for their britches, and they start, you know, demanding a sick amount of money for, you know, really not that difficult to work. You know what I mean? Like, it gets all out of balance. I don't know what these guys are paid. They're talking about it. It's kind of an interesting thing, but to call them terrorists for exercising union rights, I don't know. And when you start getting into stuff like this, this is when things get a lot more sticky. And you need someone with a slightly higher education than mine to be able to make a call on something like that. But it's an interesting thing to be aware of. Nonetheless, we will follow that. In Borg news, I'm excited about this. It's a great story. It's about time. After an excruciating and absurd debate, the double amputee sprinter Oscar Pistorius will be allowed to compete in the Olympics. Pistorius won his appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport today, which immediately overturned an asinine ruling for the International Association of Athletics Federation, which stated Pistorius gained an unfair advantage from his prosthetics. Which he does. Let's be fair here. He does. Okay? Should the guy be allowed to compete against athletes in the Olympics? I would say no. I would say no. The guy has augmented legs that make him faster. I mean, you're not allowed to use steroids. The whole thing is supposed to be about natural and legs and stuff, right? However, that says I want him to be faster than them. I want this guy to totally win because that will push in the short run. You got a bunch of upset athletes. In the long run, it means that we're going to have more and more push towards cybernetic enhancements and, you know, all that good stuff, which will help more people in the long run. I'm ecstatic, Pistorius told reporters in Milan, Italy. When I found out, I cried. This battle has been going on for far too long. It's a great day for sport. I think this is going down to history as equality for disabled people. Well, it's got nothing to do with equality if you can do like a 3-minute mile. 2 days of testing in January at the German Sport University Institute of Biomechanics Cologne yielded data showing that to run at a given speed, Pistorius required 25% less energy expenditures than his able-bodied peers. Further quantified, Pistorius' prosthesis has 30% more efficient than a human ankle. The panel wasn't convinced. So 25 for less energy, 30% more efficient. I don't know if my math's up on this, but this gives them a 50% advantage. That's hot. I hope the guy totally smokes it. I do, just because, you know, it'll be great. The panel was not persuaded that there was sufficient evidence of any metabolic advantage in favor of the double amputee using the Cheetah Flexfoot. It even sounds like a cyberpunk title. I want the Cheetah Flexfoot, Cass said. Furthermore, Cass panelists considered the IAAF did not prove the biomechanical effects of using a traditional prosthetic device gives Optor Pistoris an advantage over athletes not using the device. Whether the panel went conveniently blind to the science, whether holes truly exist in the analysis is irrelevant. What could less represent the Olympic spirit more than banning Pistoris? Unfortunately for Pistoris, his toughest challenge might still be ahead. He'll need to cut 1.01 seconds off his personal best, 45.6, to qualify for the 400-meter race in Beijing. Should he not hit that mark, South Africa could select him to the relay squad or as an alternate. A lot of the time we've had this year, we've devoted to the course case, Pistoris said. Now that I want to get home, my time can be dedicated to training. Going to have to start thinking about getting my body in shape in order to run those qualifying times. I'm hopeful there'll be enough time, but it's going to be very, very difficult. I totally think this guy's going to own this. I'm really happy about that. Ironically, in the midst of this worldwide hullabaloo, another amputee has quietly qualified the Olympics in the 10-kilometer swimming. Fellow South African Natalie de Toit lost her leg in 2001 and competes with a prosthetic leg, which begs a sad but necessary question. How long before some governing body requests testing to quantify whether a reduction in drag is unfair? We're the last people to admit it, but it's true. Sometimes the science shouldn't matter. Very interesting story. So here's hoping he totally owns that. I mean, I totally, totally hope that he just dominates that shit. But anyway, in body mod news, adding to this Pistoris story, another good cyborg story here. In body mod news, scientists have long been fascinated by the structure of the bone. Bone is very light and can withstand heavy pressures, and inside the sponge of the bone is firm and compact in certain places and porous in others. The construction industry would love to have materials like bone. Researchers at the Fraunhofer Institute of Manufacturing Engineering and Applied Materials Research have developed a similar program, a program that calculates the internal structure and density distributed by bone material, and from the scientists were able to derive the material structure from other components. The program simulates how the structure needs to be built in order to meet specific requirements. The researchers have now managed to put these simulations successfully into practice, and engineers can produce complex components with the aid of rapid prototyping technology. It involves coating a surface with wafer-thin layers of special metal powder. A laser beam heats or sinters the powder metal and then extracts in the exact places needed to be firm. It's like baking a cake, says Andreas Berbel, spokesman for the Fraunhofer Numerical Simulation of Products Process Alliance. Any remaining loose powder is subsequently removed. At the end, the product is an open-poured element, explains Berbel. Each point poses exactly the right density and thus certain stability. Now, when you get to the website and you check this thing out, it actually has a jawbone. They built a jawbone, which is that's pretty slick. You know what I mean? To be able to have that. And in the Afternow stories, I call that planamel. And it's what the spiders use in L.A. when they're living there. That's how they augment themselves and give themselves, like, severe fangs and extend their limbs and give them little spikes on their elbows and all that good Mecha Sudai stuff for people who know what Mecha Sudai is. But that is pretty hot. I mean, you know what? It's nice to be in the future sometimes. Pretty interesting. In the plague news, this is an interesting one. Web-based maps are handy for keeping tabs on weather and traffic, so why not for disease outbreaks? The new health map website digests information from a variety of sources, ranging from the World Health Organization to Google News, and plots the spread of about 50 diseases on a continually updated global map. It was developed side-by-side with two staffers at the Children's Hospital Informatics Program in Boston, physician John Brownstein and software developer Clark Freefeld. While working on a state-funded program to track disease outbreaks in Massachusetts, the two discovered some inconsistencies on how the information was reported. Some sources, such as ProMed Mail, provide very specific data that is verified by medical experts, but the process can be lengthy. Out of the other extreme, newspaper articles and blog entries come out far more quickly, but are more likely to contain errors, such as unconfirmed reports about avian flu in a country, or mosquitoes turning people into zombies, as everyone has seen. So it's interesting that, you know, when you see stuff like that, you wonder now where that's going to go, you know, mapping this kind of stuff. I think it's a good idea. I think it's a good idea. I think that's a positive thing to have. I think it's something that, you know, should be done. I like the idea of being able to track 28 days later. I think that's a pretty good plan. Call me crazy. But I like having a big board. I like having a big board to track stuff. Today's daily hack is the StealthNet. This is sweetness. StealthNet is based on the original RShare client and has been enhanced by a developer team who consists of Planet Peer community members. In comparison with the current RS Share client, StealthNet offers a whole lot of new features like downloading and resuming, interrupting downloads can be resumed, multi-language support, search filters, several types of file, and more. In the early stages, StealthNet was known as RShare Community Editor. However, due to several reasons, we have had to rename this project, and its new name is StealthNet. This is the reason why RShare forums and the Planet Peer board have also been renamed RShare/StealthNet. Both clients are open source, the code is available, they're released under GPL. How does it work? The RShare network, as well as the network protocol, were developed by Lars Regensberger with a strong anonymity/security and acceptable download rates in mind. All traffic in the RShare network is routed through other nodes on the network. Furthermore, traffic is encrypted with point-to-point encryption, and this combines these two techniques provide a very high level of anonymity. Definitely useful for people in Europe, all you good people over there. I would rather light a candle than curse your darkness. I have some Shadowrun news for you in the Recomedia section. The Senate is expected to vote on a controversial measure to amend the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act on July 8th. So they've already voted on this bad boy. The legislation would rewrite the nation's surveillance laws and authorize the National Security Agency's secret program of warrantless wiretapping. Democracy Now!, which is what the link is, goes to, there's an audio program where they speak with Mark Klein, a technician for AT&T for over 22 years, knows his stuff. In 2006, Klein leaked internal AT&T documents that revealed the company had set up a secret room in San Francisco office to give the National Security Agency access to fiber optic internet cables. Wow! So, just in case you're wondering, yes, they really are watching. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I'll be back next week to make sure you get the news you need to survive. This has been a free podcast brought to you by the Wogs Who Care. If you cannot donate to the show, please distribute. But if you can donate, please do so by clicking on the Donate tab on the Dark Atlas website or send an envelope to Rant Media Studios, Box 18121, 12150C, 56th Street, Delta, BC, Canada, V4M, 2M4, thank you very much. And I want to thank the Army of Flying Monkeys for their assistance in gathering data. If you have information you'd like to send me, you can reach me at newsreel, N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L, at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, always psytrance all the time. Remember, everyone, we will never defeat the enemy if we're at each other's throats. So until next time, hey, that's what server said. End of line.
You are like Lee to be eaten. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of match in your inventory. It got narrated at you in the second person. Every time you put it up, it seems you got another version of your life told to you by a status line blinking. The impossible people you could be without thinking. Yourself insane of personality problems. With a mop on a dropship or trying to stab a goblin that don't play. In public life, you get arrested. Psychoactive medication daily in your big intestine. And the testing that the voices in your head sent the dwarf shot first. Embedded arrow that you bled for doctors with needles. Posit repeatedly that you knocked down that midget in the park unneededly. This has seeded the idea that you should never venture from the house. Never get misunderstood by the non-player characters inhabiting Earth. None of whom are too concerned about Norton Bird. Not one of whom ever aimed a fish around the room. Trying to get it in the ear canal because doom be set. The last planet they were on or near. The verge of a set of poetics they wouldn't hear. Never appeared at the cruise with invisible ink. No SM goddesses ever gave them pause to think. Never piloted six robots, each distinct. Don't matter how many 2 liters they drink. They're not going to follow what you're saying at all. They impute and appall in the scope of their gall. As you hide in your room in disgust with the lights turned out, turn them on in a turn, leave a mark for now. You are likely to be likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. Read a pamphlet from a mailbox that urges low cunning, offers cursor and font type running. You're running and parses what you tell it. Pronouns intact, abbreviations if you need them, better keep it grammatical. Better punctuate your sentences and never redact the name of anything ambiguous. You're about to get asked. You meet the red one, the round one, the crooked or the blue. Better keep that in your pocket, don't know yet what it could do. Could be this spray for the groove, gonna need it if it is a situation that reloads, restarts, or quits. Wonder how many points, after how many points you gotta get before you're done, endeavor then to rejoice. When you wish more ardently, identity's shed. For continuance, the rhyme forever voyaging. Fled from all lights and colors, from all smells and sounds. Just the lyric on the monochrome display, and you're proud to make another verse appear. While solving riddles, if you didn't have to sleep, you know you'd never seek a quiddle. You'd be ever in the middle, in the midst of a quest. If it wasn't for Dawn, the gown, you'd never get dressed. In your underwear typing, just like front. Keyboard attached up to my fingers, wrists bare the brunt. As I seek to do stunts and bleep through their descriptions. I think I went once to some sands that were Egyptian. Then I retained plane ticket snapshots, receipts. Yes, I stand unconvinced that this has happened to me. I wouldn't want to misremember or get confused. Recall a crawling towards a pyramid, appearing over dunes. Recall of entering the thing and descending stairs. Does it descend from there? Adventure to nightmare. Did I battle a snake? Was the treasure intact? Or did the TRS-80 in my brain get hacked? Thanks, Grandpa, for buying it. Now my life's ruined. 22 years later, heads invested, got the ruin, fluent, scissifying, trying to escape, but I can't cause I'm up and around and awake. You are likely to be eaten. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory. You are likely to be eaten by a group. If this predicament seemed particularly cruel, consider whose fault it could be. Now the torture of a match in your inventory.
Into the slavering fangs of a lurking Gru.